Demand action. Kimberly Mata Rubio, who works as a reporter for Ovald Leader News, continued. We seek a ban on assault rifles and high-capacity magazines. We understand that for some reason, to some people, to people with money, to people who fund political campaigns, that guns are more important than children. So at this moment, we ask for progress. We seek to raise the age to purchase these weapons from 18 to 21 years of age. We seek red flag laws, stronger background checks. We also want to repeal gun manufacturers' liability impunity, she added. Zanita Everhart of Buffalo also spoke. Her 21-year-old son, Zaire Goodman, worked at the Tops supermarket and was wounded there on May 14th when a white supremacist shooter killed 10 people, all of them African-American. To the lawmakers who feel that we do not need stricter gun laws, let me paint a picture for you. My son, Zaire, has a hole in the right side of his neck. Two on his back and another on his left leg, caused by an exploding bullet from an AR-15. As I clean his wounds, I can feel pieces of that bullet in his back. Shrapnel will be left inside of his body for the rest of his life. Now, I want to picture that exact scenario for one of your children, unquote. On the same day as the hearing, the U.S. has passed, along mostly partisan lines, the Protecting Our Kids Act, which includes limited gun control provisions such as raising the minimum age for purchasing semi-automatic weapons from 18 to 21 and banning ammunition clips that hold more than 10 rounds, excluding those already privately owned. This bill is presumed dead on arrival in the Senate, where it lacks any chance of reaching the 60 votes needed to overcome the guaranteed Republican filibuster. AR-15s have enthusiastic defenders among Senate Republicans. Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy told Vice they're used for killing feral pigs in the whatever the middle of Louisiana. South Dakota Senator John Thune said, in my state, they use them to shoot prairie dogs and, you know, other types of varmints. While Republican senators protect the rights of a few to slaughter pigs and other varmints with military-grade assault weapons, Oval's only pediatrician, Dr. Roy Guerrero, described to the House Oversight Committee what he saw in the hospital as he responded to the mass shooting, quote, two children whose bodies had been so pulverized by the bullets fired at them, decapitated, whose flesh had been so ripped apart that the only clue as to their identities were the blood-spattered cartoon clothes still clinging to them, unquote. The doctor ended by calling on elected officials to take action on gun control. You are the doctors and our country is the patient. We are lying on the operating table, riddled with bullets like the children of Robb Elementary and so many other schools. We are bleeding out and you are not there. We need a comprehensive assault weapons ban now, he added. Economic divide.
The Ukraine conflict continues to devastate the world economies, in particular economies in the Eurozone, as countries in Europe continue to ramp up pressure on Russia in the form of sanctions led by the U.S. Their inflation is hitting record highs. Hi, I'm Kavitat Wei. This is Economic Divide. Coming up in today's program, the Eurozone inflation, the highest on record, coming in at 8.1%. But inflation is not just restricted to Europe. This has become a global headache and a global phenomenon, like for the UK and for the US, experiencing inflation that they haven't seen in decades. Next, we're going to take a look at central banks, how they are scrambling on how to deal with the problem. Well, raising interest rates seems to be their only solution. Meanwhile, they are also grappling with the risk of recessions that may be occurring as we speak. Also, we are going to take a look at energy prices, some say at the heart of inflation. They are increasing as European countries failed to have a unified stance when it came to buying or not buying Russian gas. Do stay tuned.
The inflation rate in the Eurozone has reached levels which were unthinkable several years ago. According to official data released by Eurostat, Eurozone inflation has risen to a new record high of 8.1% in May from 7.4% in April. That is the highest annual level since the creation of the euro currency in 1999. This is the 10th consecutive month that prices have been rising, and there are no signs of a letup. Germany, which is Europe's biggest economy, has been among the hardest hit. Its inflation rate now stands at a record 8.7%. France, another Eurozone economic powerhouse, has experienced an inflation rate of 5.8%. The inflation rate in Spain stands at 8.5%, and in Italy, 7.3%. The fastest hike in price was registered in Lithuania. In May, the inflation rate of that small Baltic state stood at 15.7%. Energy costs remain the single biggest factor pushing up prices for consumers and businesses. In May, it rose by 39.2% from a year earlier. The European Commission recently lowered its economic growth forecast to 2.7% this year from the 4% estimate in winter. There are warnings that Europe may tip into a sharp slowdown or outright recession before the end of the year.
The dragon has not yet full blasted itself, but it's underway.
It's time now to take a look at some of the social media posts on this. As a matter of fact, taking a look at what we are seeing in terms of inflation, just the latest, just a Google search on news, you can see Turkey's inflation rate is, again, the focus. Taking a look at the U.S. inflation, it says, has it peaked? And also how central banks are scrambling to deal with inflation. Just some of the latest news results for that. Well, let's take a look at this first post from an online website. It says U.S.-EU inflation results of unprecedented money printing. That's according to the Russian President Vladimir Putin. He pointed to the U.S. printing press and the EU green energy policies, in which inflation in the U.S. is a consequence of mistakes by American financial authorities, which they admitted to, while in the EU it has more to do with short-sighted energy policies in Brussels. The Russian President Vladimir Putin also said on Friday that either way it has nothing to do with Moscow or its actions in Ukraine. Next up, Twitter posts, while oil and gas companies are making record profits, they are charging consumers record prices, and every single House Republican just voted against stopping them from price gouging the Americans. Let that sink in. We're going to talk about price gouging later on in the program. Next up, inflation is global. Turkey's inflation soars to 73% as food and energy costs skyrocket. Then a look at this particular post, Biden's real plan to fight inflation. Just a blame game is what's going on, according to this post. And this chart actually outlines that. It says from him calling inflation transitory to then blaming the former U.S. President Donald Trump, then blaming the Republicans, and then coming back full circle and then calling it transitory again. Now, next we take a look at this particular post, which says Eurozone inflation has moved up to 8.1%. That is the highest level ever. Meanwhile, the European Central Bank is still holding interest rates at negative levels. This is perhaps the greatest disconnect between easy monetary policy and unabating rising prices that the world has ever seen. All right, that obviously is a quick snapshot of what people think and what is out there when it comes to inflation. Let me introduce our guest for a breakdown on this in our first Q&A. We have Benjamin Chow who joins us. He's a professor at the Paris School of Technology and Business who's currently residing in Beijing, China. Okay, Benjamin Chow, welcome to Economic Divide. The war in Ukraine has compounded a problem that existed in the world, and that is focused on price increases that has led to inflation. This has been especially true in Europe. For example, as of March 2022, the inflation rate in the European Union, 7.8%, up and increasing. Turkey looking at around 70%. How can inflation then be eradicated in order to bring it back to pre-existing levels?
Well, in monetary economics, the famous rule of thumb is that inflation is everywhere a monetary phenomenon. I think 95% of inflation should probably follow this rule. Fundamentally, inflation is driven by expectation of continuous rise of price levels, which in turn is driven by the relative shortage of goods given the money stock at hand. The current sanctions against Russia and the disruption of supplies from Ukraine create serious energy and crops shortage and shortage expectation, and thus we are seeing historic inflation in decades. Now, the very fact that Europe relies on Russia for nearly 40% of its natural gas and 25% of its oil means that it is not possible to remove Europeans' need of Russian oil and gas in the near term.
All right, let's bring in Marshall Baker. Marshall Baker is an economist at the Schiller Institute who joins us. Marshall Baker, welcome to Economic Divide. The U.S. and its allies are being blamed for actually prolonging the Ukraine conflict. The U.S. has actually not even held back, saying its true intentions is to weaken Russia militarily mainly. Now, the question is at what cost? This is coming at a cost for the Europeans, also for the Americans who are suffering as a result. And the U.S. is taking the lead here in terms of following a policy towards Ukraine that is to the detriment of the world. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, what we're seeing in prolonging the combat in Ukraine is a purposeful decision by global NATO, you could call it, Brussels, London, and the United States. Many of the leaders here have said they want to weaken Russia or just debilitate Russia. So many Ukrainians as well as Russians are dying. Millions of people are displaced because of this wrongful policy of it's like adding gasoline to the fire.
It is time now for our Infant News section of the program. This is where we take a look at economic news from around the world. Hopefully we have something from where you are. Our first item, anti-Russia sanctions. The title, shooting themselves in the foot, Western sanctions on Russia. This is something that we have covered, but again, it's showing itself. In this case, this entry went on to say that Moscow has diversified its commodities exports as the EU faces the difficult task of replacing Russia as its energy supplier. That is something that the EU has been grappling with from day one since the Russia conflict or the Ukraine conflict started. Next up, Russia-China trade. Russia trade with China has hit a record high, $200 billion this year. Moscow continuing to pivot to Asia as ties with the West crumble. Now, it goes on to say before the start of the conflict, the European Union actually was Russia's top trading partner. But now that has been replaced with China. Really no surprise there. Everybody assumed that that is the trend that would follow after the conflict with Ukraine started. Next up, oil prices. OPEC to increase oil supply after pressure from the U.S. Well, good news maybe, but the prices just keep rising. In fact, the price of oil rose after the announcement was made. Oil producers said that they would raise the price by 50%, but it seems like that did not have an impact on the market. Only time will tell how that is going to pan out. And finally, mass revolt. That's right. That's what the title said. Are we headed for mass revolts to upturn the global economic model? How long can billionaires continue to amass wealth while the world's poorest struggle to buy food? The number of severely food insecure people has doubled from 135 million to 276 million. And that is why this entry is questioning this, that it is a possibility for it to happen. Well, that covers the items for this part of the program in our Infant News section. If you have any news from your part of the world economically, economic in its nature, please send it to us.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to our in-depth section, Inflation, the theme of today's program. And in this case, we want to take a look at the not-so-obvious reasons behind this phenomenon. And in this case, in point, corporate greed is our focus. Okay, the U.S. is filled with multinational conglomerates that control vast parts of the U.S. economy and its output. Now, some of the giants when it comes to how they are actually in control of huge parts of the market: General Mills, Nestle, Kellogg's, Mars, Danone, Unilever, Mondelez, and Coca-Cola and PepsiCo, all the different subsidiaries and brands that they control. That amounts to quite a bit of the U.S. economy. They've monopolized these sectors, which covers a vast variety of industries. Basically, to summarize this, the fruits of economic growth, well, they are being hoarded by America's profitable corporations. That's one of the conclusions that is being made. And these corporations are facing negligible competition. A lot of the concern about corporate concentration, well, it surrounds this potential to drive up prices. The fewer options there are, well, the fewer places consumers actually have to shop for goods and services. And as a result, then there is less pressure for competitors to keep the prices down. So they control the prices. And of course, the only way is up when it comes to profits. However, everybody's ignoring the deeper structural reasons for the price increases. The concentration of the American economy basically is in the hands of a very few corporate giants with the power to raise prices, which is what we just covered over there. This is putting another perspective to that. So when you take a look at that, then we have to take a look at another conclusion that is being met here. Let's take a look at the market and how, if it was competitive, what would happen. So you got the corporations. These are some of the things that would happen. Corporations would keep their prices as low as possible. They would do that because they would be competing for customers, especially new customers. But when there's no competition, for example, no desire for new customers or keeping prices low, obviously a result of the lack of competition. And corporations would do everything to avoid passing those costs on to consumers in the form of higher prices, and that would be for the fear of that happening. Now, the lack of competition is overall what we're looking at behind why monopolies are successful in keeping prices at whatever point they want. You actually don't have to go too far to see how this is happening. Let's take a look at what U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren has said, making a reference to Chevron and Exxon, who have doubled the profits, in which she said, "This isn't about inflation, this is about price gouging." What is price gouging? What does she mean by that? Well, price gouging, the definition that is when a seller increases the prices of goods, services, or commodities to a level much higher than is considered reasonable or fair. In some countries, that is actually illegal. Usually, this type of event, price gouging, occurs after a demand or supply shock. So the Ukraine conflict can be a reference point in terms of that shock or demand or supply shock to actually occur. All right, let's take a look at another example of a monopoly. In this case, in point, we're going to take a look at what happened in the U.S., the baby formula shortage. I don't know if you've heard about that. Well, that is something that has occurred. What is the reason behind that? Well, in part, it's due to a monopoly over this particular item. Why? Abbott Nutrition is the name. Yes, it controls 40% of the baby formula market in the U.S. Although the production had stopped, it has since announced that it would start up again. And the prices, as a result, are projected to increase. Why? Because a lot of price gouging that we were talking about was occurring with the minimal supply that was available in the market. So Abbott Nutrition takes a look at the price gouging, seeing how prices increased, you can be sure that they're going to increase the prices before the production was actually halted. All right, let's bring back Marsha Baker. She's an economist at the Schiller Institute to get her analysis into this. Marsha Baker, welcome back. U.S. inflation, we're going to take a look at that as our theme in this question. The highest level that is seen, consumer price index of the U.S. in March rose by 8.5% from a year ago. So the fastest annual gain since December of 1981. That is a lot for the U.S. and, of course, squeezing the general public and Americans as a whole. Energy prices, prices of food, et cetera. Now, when the U.S. goes out and assists Ukraine militarily to the tune of billions of dollars, then the question has to be asked, aren't Americans getting squeezed as a result?
The economic breakdown process in the United States is breathtaking. It's getting worse all the time. On May 26th, the new official figures came out that in the first quarter of 2022, the United States gross domestic product went down by 1.5% in absolute terms. And this is an understatement. Manufacturing declined and other activity declined. And the opposite happened. Imports shot way up. Americans are existing by imports from China, from South America, and other parts of the world. And the inflation hitting people in the United States because there is not productive activity backing up the dollar.
That sounds pretty apocalyptic based on what she's saying. All right, Benjamin Chow rejoins us. The professor at Paris School of Technology and Business, who joins us from Beijing, China. Benjamin Chow, welcome back. The U.S. and its allies are prolonging the Ukraine conflict. They've been accused of that. They're not going for the diplomatic route to try to reach some kind of resolve on this. And the U.S. has actually made no bones about its intentions and goal to weaken Russia militarily. And now, in this case in point, the Europeans are following the U.S. lead. But at the same time, they're shooting themselves in the foot. Their economies are suffering as a result. Isn't the U.S. at fault for following a policy on Ukraine that is actually, in some sense, to the detriment of the world economically?
Frankly, almost everyone sees that NATO did not want to see a de-escalation of tension since late February, before the military conflict has started. The NATO could have rejected Ukraine's entry to NATO outright, and the situation would be de-escalated immediately back then.
The inflationary trend is not limited to Europe alone. Prices in the U.S. are also rising drastically. The Labor Department reported earlier in May that consumer prices have jumped 8.3% last month from a year ago. The United States consumer confidence also edged lower in May, as Americans' view of their present and future prospects dimmed in the midst of persistent inflation. Consumer confidence index dipped to 106.4 in May from 108.6 in April.
For example, I went into the grocery store about a couple of weeks ago and I picked up a few small onions. And when I looked up on the register, it said that it was over $5. And I told the cashier, like, this isn't right. Like, this price has got to be wrong. Not for the two onions. Two or three onions should not be $5.
I don't think it's reached the highest point. I think that's probably still yet to come. You know, it's in bad shape right now. I don't think the worst has come yet.
Just recently, the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen admitted that she erred last year, predicting that elevated inflation would not pose a continuing problem.
Sooner or later, we will see a recession, and the answer may actually be somewhat sooner rather than somewhat later. The Federal Reserve head and the Secretary of Treasury are meeting with the President of the United States even now, and clearly they have a mission in mind. Not a mission impossible, but a mission to cut inflation down to something closer to the 2% target rate than the 6.3% rate that we've seen recently. That is going to hurt the economy. It's not going to be a steep recession, a deep recession. It's not going to see unemployment rates going up very sharply. But we are, by the end of this year or early next year, probably going to see something that would be called a recession, or at least a slowing of the rate of growth to something that's close to zero.
A number of reasons have been cited for the rising inflationary trend across the globe. The war in Ukraine and the ensuing sanctions that the West imposed on Russia have seriously disrupted global business and trade and affected regional and international players. Ukraine's economy shrank 16% in the first quarter of 2022 compared to last year's first quarter, and it could be down by 40% by the end of the year. Russia has already suffered from the consequences of the sanctions. Furthermore, bottlenecks in global trade is also a serious factor. The delivery of goods and services has been seriously weakened due to the aftermath of the war and the pre-existing pandemic restrictions. And there's the fear that new variations of the COVID virus could cause disruptions in major economies. China has just ended tough COVID restrictions that were imposed following a surge in cases in several cities, including Shanghai. Given the current situation, there's a big question mark on Washington's insistence to send more weapons to Ukraine. The weapons will prolong the war and cause more humanitarian and economic damage. It seems that the U.S. is determined to make this war continue at the expense of Ukrainians, Europeans, and its own people.
Even before inflation became the economic monster that it is, ravaging the economies of different countries across the world, the inflation momentum was already there, and it had nothing to do with the Ukraine war. It had to do with one thing: globalization. First, what is globalization? Globalization is the process by which businesses or other organizations develop international influence or start operating on an international scale. And what does globalization have to do with inflation? This is the reason. Experts says U.S. undermining globalization by seeing China as a threat. Tensions between China and the U.S. boiled over when the former U.S. President Donald Trump came into power, who waged trade and technology wars. The former U.S. president promised that his American First policy would work to the advantage of Americans, but that did not happen. Trump's tariffs to imports of Chinese goods was a policy that hurt U.S. consumers more than those in China. The policy backfired and hurt U.S. consumers and companies. One study concluded that U.S. exporters had to pay higher prices for components imported from China. Tariffs on imported washing machines raised prices for washers by almost 12%, and on dryers as well. Costs that weren't passed on to the consumer were absorbed by importers. And at this point, prices began to rise for many commodities that were imported from China into the U.S. or were not viewed feasible by companies to import it from China. But costs within the U.S. for these items were much more than that from China. According to one economist, by inserting itself in global value chains in manufacturing and assembly, China, through its competitive advantage in labor-intensive goods, gave multinational corporations a low-cost means to massively boost production and sales. Add to that COVID-19 and now the Ukraine war, and maybe the coming clash with China. The U.S. is fast-tracking itself to unprecedented inflation levels, with the EU to maybe follow the U.S. lead. That does it for this edition of the program. Thanks for watching. Please send us any comments or critique that you may have of the program. Contact info is on your screens now.
The worldwide inflation epidemic, if we can call it that, is not just about Ukraine. It was there actually even before the pandemic. It was there from a long time ago. And why do I say that? Because it existed in the form of what's called inequality. You've heard the phrase before, the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. Well, that's exactly the case. That's been like that for a long time, purchasing power of the poor to have become less, so any price increase of any kind to hurt them. According to the latest, today 71% of the world's population lives in countries where inequality has grown. The U.S. and its NATO member allies have now compounded this through the Ukraine war. That does it for this edition of the program. For me, Kavita Hwaii and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Guardian analysis has uncovered how American companies enrich themselves and their investors while boasting about jacking up prices. We now present you an article written by Tom Perkins under the heading, Revealed, Top U.S. Corporations Raising Prices on Americans Even as Profits Surge. As inflation shot to a new peak in March, cost increases exacted a deep toll on the economy, eating into most Americans' wages and further imperiling the financially vulnerable. But for many of US's largest companies and their shareholders, it has been a very different story. One widely accepted narrative holds that companies and consumers are sharing in inflationary pain. But a Guardian analysis of top corporations' financials and earnings calls reveals most are enjoying profit increases even as they pass on costs to their customers, many of whom are struggling to afford gas, food, clothing, housing, and other basics. The analysis of Securities and Exchange Commission filings for 100 U.S. corporations found net profits up by a median of 49%, and in some individual cases by as much as 111,000%. Those increases came as companies lumbered customers with higher prices and all but 10 executed massive stock buyback programs or bumped dividends to enrich investors. In earnings calls, executives detailed how even as demand and profits rose post-vaccine, they passed on most or all of inflationary costs to customers via price increases, and some took the opportunity to add more on top. Margins, the share of sales converted into profits, also improved for the majority of the companies analyzed by The Guardian. Economists who reviewed the data say it's more evidence of a clear reality. Consumers are taking a financial hit as companies and shareholders profit or are largely shielded. Krista Brown, a policy analyst with the American Economic Liberties Project, said, "It's obvious that corporations are trying to pass on any form of short-term pain they might be feeling, and that serving the top, wealthiest class instead of those in need of fair wages or products that are affordable." Media framing likely influences public perception. News reports of Hershey's multiple price hikes over the last year read like so many dire reports on inflation's pervasive toll. The company, which owns popular brands like Reese's Kit Kat and Skinny Pop, has been cast as the latest victim of ever-increasing inflation. But a closer look at the company's financials suggests a vastly different reality. Hershey's net profits spiked 62% between the fourth quarter in 2019 and 2021. Its operating margin widened, and it recently rewarded shareholders with $200 million in stock buybacks. The chief executive officer, Michelle Buck, told investors, "Still, customers will pay even more for candy shops in 2022 as Hershey aims for even higher profits. Pricing will be an important lever for us this year and is expected to drive most of our growth. Similarly, a Kroger executive told investors in June, "A little bit of inflation is always good for our business," while Hostess's chief executive officer in March said rising prices across the economy helps it profit. Lindsay Owens, executive director of the Groundwork Collaborative, which tracks companies' profits, said, "The pandemic, war, supply chain bottlenecks, and pricing decisions made in corporate suits have created a smokescreen." She added that obscures questionable price increases and allows businesses to be portrayed as victims of inflation. Lindsay Owens said, "That grey, nebulous area is fertile ground for companies right now, and you hear about it in their earnings calls. Inflation itself is the opportunity." The Guardian's findings are in line with recent US Commerce Department data that shows corporate profit margins rose 35% during the last year and are at their highest level since 1950. Meanwhile, inflation rose to 8.5% year over year in March. The Guardian's analysis is the first to take a granular look at a cross-section of companies across a range of industries in the United States. It compared the most recent quarter's profits to the same quarter 2 years ago, pre-pandemic. Price increases were obtained by checking earnings reports, though those often lacked specifics. The data is not intended to be definitive, but does show how a wide sample of companies have raised prices even as profits jumped. After earnings call, executives made no secret of their strategies. As gas prices soared, Chevron's 240% profit spike was part of the best 2 quarters the company has ever seen, prompting a dividend increase and assurances it would keep production low to maintain high prices. Steel Dynamics profits increased by 809%. The company was not materially affected by inflation, as higher prices exceeded increased supply chain costs. Fertilizer giant Nutrien's profits shot up by about $1.2 billion on higher selling prices that more than offset higher raw material costs and lower sales volume. Nike's 53% profit increase, driven by higher prices, was only partially offset by supply chain and inflationary cost increases. The analysis found commodity companies trading in oil, timber, rubber, meat, wheat, steel, and mining recorded the highest profit increases, while restaurants and retailers saw comparatively lower improvements or losses. Martin Schmalz, an Oxford University economist, noted commodity prices spikes reverberate down the supply chain, eventually hitting the consumer. He added, "The Guardian's data objectively shows a massive transfer of wealth from consumers who pay higher prices to shareholders and investment firms that reap the benefits." But even as profits skyrocket, many have dismissed the idea they play a meaningful role in inflation, including Larry Summers, a former Obama advisor with clout in the Biden White House. He previously called profiteering claims business bashing that are terrible economics. A Hershey spokesperson stressed that its growth was driven in part by volume, and it would be reinvesting much of its profits to meet growing demand. He said, "These investments are where we are making the biggest use of cash." Financial observers have varying takes on whether companies are profiteering or price gouging or simply profiting. George Parks, an analyst at Bespoke Investment, pointed to Caterpillar, which recorded a 958% profit increase driven by volume growth and price realization between 2019 and 2021's fourth quarter. Eliminating price increases may have dropped the company's 2021 quarter four operating profits slightly below the $1.3 billion it made in 2020. George Park said, "This isn't price gouging, and it shows pretty concretely that there's a lot of nuance there." Adding, "Profiteering is not the primary driver of inflation, nor the primary driver of corporate profits." However, he added that it's reasonable to question whether Caterpillar should have passed on its cost increases to its customers. Brown noted the company also spent $5 billion on buybacks last year, and $1.3 billion for a quarter of profits is still high, especially in the context of American workers' shrinking wages. She said companies have access to massive capital. They could have one or two years that are more painful, not even more painful, just less profitable for their investors, and they're choosing not to.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei elaborates on six key points of Imam Khomeini's testament. June 4, 2018. If you travel to different Muslim countries, you will notice that their people have a high opinion of your beliefs, motives, and aspirations, regardless of their governments. They admire our slogans against oppression, the snake-like Zionist network and hegemony. They admire the chants that we have shouted in support of the oppressed and the Palestinian nation. This is what Muslim nations think. Their behavior is indicative of the spread of an Islamic revolution. As you can see, even our nation's views regarding nuclear energy, the fact that the Iranian nation resisted the pressure of the enemies and asked for its right have been reflected in the Islamic world in a way that resulted in Muslim and Arab countries declaring the nuclear energy has turned into a public sense of urgency for all Arab countries. Both the friends and foes of the Iranian nation admit that the prophecy of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi regarding the spread of the revolution has been realized today, an instance of which is the Palestinian issue. Like the Iranian nation, all nations are sympathetic towards the Palestinian nation.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Like the Iranian nation, all nations consider the Israeli regime as an illegitimate and imposed power on the region. Of course, many governments are not supportive of their nations. That idleness is exactly the element that strengthens Israel. The Zionist regime has no internal power to stand on its own feet. Today, there are two factors that have helped the Zionist regime to resist. One is the unconditional and shameless support of the US for this degenerate regime. And the other is the lack of support for the Palestinian people on the part of the Arab and Muslim governments. Unfortunately, most of the Muslim governments do not carry out their responsibilities in favor of Palestine as they should, and they are not harmonious with their people. The third prominent point, which is important to our nation and youth, in Imam Khomeini's testament and in the statements that he made during the last 10 years of his blessed life, is that the Islamic Revolution helps our nation progress.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, close up, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Power is out and the elevator doesn't work. I have to go up the stairs. Ah, the sound comes from beneath the stairs. Oh my God! A white, beautiful Persian cat along with its four baby cats are here. How cute they are. The mother cat might be hungry. Let me bring some food for her. By the way, today I'm going to take a tour to Darabad Nature and Wildlife Museum. Stay with me. Darabad Nature and Wildlife Museum is a complete center for introducing Iran's wildlife and natural species. This educational and professional museum is located in Tehran. The museum has a building which is 2,500 square meters, also covering an area of 12,000 square meters. In this museum, you can gain comprehensive and evidentiary information about the nature of Iran. This museum also provides the visitors with the sciences of taxidermy of animals, as well as keeping plants. The museum became a member of the International Council of Museums, ICOM, in 1997. It is also an active member of the IUCN-CEC, Commission on Education and Communication of the Museum. This museum consists of a number of sections. In Darabad Museum, 5 orders of mammals in 13 families of different animals, plus 165 species of birds, out of a total of about 517 species of birds identified in Iran, are displayed in the museum halls. One of the remarkable and rare examples that have been added to the museum collection is the extinct Persian tiger skin. I am now at the end of Ajudaniye Street near Darabad neighborhood. Not a long way to the museum. Well, this neighborhood has pleasant weather and walking in this area is enjoyable. I am now in the hall, which covers a number of species from Asia, Europe, and North America. Oh, what a big and strange hall! Oh, look! This is Python, the longest snake in the world. Thank God it's a taxidermy. And here, there are Indian and Sri Lankan peacocks, male and female. The female peacock has colorful spreading feathers and it's gorgeous. And in this part, mammals from Europe and North America are displayed. This is moose. The biggest deer in the world. And this is the European yellow deer. Yes. And here we have a grizzly bear from North America. How big it is. Oh, the Siberian tiger. It's magnificent. And here I am in the Hall of Africa. This hall displays mammals from Africa as well as migrating birds of this continent. At the entrance of this hall, you can see horn and skull of wild African bull as well as the ivory of African elephant. And on my right, a black rhino, wild dog, and African leopard are displayed. Darabad Nature and Wildlife Museum has several diverse sections. The Hall of Northern Iran, the whole of Central and Southern Iran, the whole of marines and reptiles, the whole of insects, and many other spectacular sections. Well, art is long and life is short, as they say. Indeed, I can't describe all the sections of this museum in a brief radio program. I can just hope for you to visit this museum soon. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Thousands of South Koreans gathered in downtown Seoul to remember the tragic deaths of Shin Mi-sun and Shin Hyo-soon, ran over by a U.S. military vehicle on their way to their friend's birthday party on June 13, 2002. The children's family's lawyer hopes for change in U.S. relations and influence on Korea.
The massacre of two middle school students is a symbol of unequal South Korea-U.S. relations. In that regard, I think that the work of candlelight among our people to establish an equal relationship between South Korea and the United States in the future and move toward peaceful reunification of the Korean Peninsula remains unfinished.
Two U.S. soldiers were charged with negligent homicide, but acquitted in a U.S. military court amid anti-American candlelight protests.
The deaths of Mi-sun and Hyo-soon under the tracks of a U.S. military vehicle 20 years ago are but one episode of a problematic alliance relationship, from the Status of Forces Agreement to the cost of hosting 28,500 troops in South Korea. Alliance ties are a constant source of controversy and debate.
Some argue South Koreans view the presence of U.S. forces as an obstacle preventing the country from exercising sovereignty.
It's not fit for the global era and very risky for South Korea to cling to a falling sun with the status of American hegemony declining so much. I hope we can establish more neutral diplomacy reflecting our national interests.
New President Yoon Suk-yeol seeks to strengthen the South Korea-U.S. alliance, a shift in policy that worries many South Koreans. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi and his visiting Venezuelan counterpart Nicolas Maduro have signed a 20-year document on comprehensive strategic cooperation, which mainly covers a wide range of areas, including petrochemical, oil, economic, tourism, cultural, and political fields. In a press briefing after the signing ceremony, President Raisi and his Venezuelan counterpart Maduro said the two countries should work together closely in areas such as trade, economy, agriculture, as well as science and technology. They also hailed establishment of direct Tehran-Caracas flights as an opportunity to enhance relations and bring the two nations closer.
Venezuela has shown that it has put up exemplary resistance against the enemy's threats, sanctions, and imperialism. The Iranian nation, too, has been under numerous sanctions and threats for more than 40 years now. But the Iranian people have turned these sanctions into an opportunity to further make progress.
We will witness how the new world will take shape and how we will stand up to problems and secure progress. Iranian and Venezuelan youth should know that the future world will enjoy equality and justice, and that we will stand up to imperialism.
Earlier on Friday, in an interview with Iran's Spanish TV channel Hispan TV, Maduro said Venezuela